Welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am publisher Ryan Burns, and joining me to discuss what a victorious weekend it was for your North Dakota State Bison is one of the most elite NDSU athletic minds in all the country. As always, joining me as contributor, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you on this Monday evening?
I'm fantastic. You're exactly right. As far as, you know, not only the fan side, but the media side, so many fun stories to tell, and obviously just a really fun weekend to be a Bison fan.
Absolutely, and to kick things off, we have to talk about the comeback win at Grand Forks that happened early in the weekend there, as the Bison were able to come back and, you know, take the victory there behind Kai Cabela's there. So, Ross, Bison wins 69-67, the first win in over a decade. Let's rejoice.
Absolutely. That was a hell of a Friday night. We'll talk a little bit about the Richmond-Illinois State game that Bison fans were paying attention to, but that was NDSU's first victory over the University of North Dakota in Grand Forks since 2003. You know, there was, of course, a long period of time there where the two schools didn't play when NDSU went up to Division I and the Fighting Hawks did not follow. But at the same time, this was the third time that they played in Grand Forks, and they were favored both of the other two times that they played up there and were unable to come away with a victory.
Yeah, and this team was just so resilient, which was phenomenal to see, down 15 in the second half and even 13 with 8 minutes to go. What was the key for the Bison to obviously pull off the victory against the Fighting Hawks?
I had to fight off a pretty strong urge because Coach Richmond got in on Coach Kleiman's press conference today, Monday, over the lunch hour, and I wanted to ask him if he and his coaching staff had considered the strategy of maybe not spotting the opposition 15 points. But I did withhold and chose not to go that direction.
Probably a good idea, yeah.
It just seems like, as talented as this team is, and I have a pretty high opinion of it, they continue to spot teams big leads, whether they are, you know, comparable or not. From a skill level standpoint, it really doesn't seem to matter whether it's a good team or it isn't. The Bison are going to let you go, and then they'll come back for you at the end of the game. NDSU was down 15 early in the second half, but still down 13 at the 8-minute media timeout, and it looked like just another bad episode of the Grand Forks soap opera, and looked like another Bison loss up north, and that Bison men's basketball fans would have to wait until next year's game in the Shack, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, and a huge reason NDSU was able to come back was behind the freshman guard there, Kai Cabela, putting up 18 points. What can you say about the freshman guard's coming out party?
It was honestly unbelievable. And it's not that I don't think that Cabela can be a good player, but his jump shot looked like it needed work early in the season, and he wasn't incredibly aggressive, but he went absolutely nuts over the last 8 minutes of that basketball game. I think he scored from like the 8-minute mark to the 2-minute mark. I think he scored 12 points, had a couple of key assists, and played really good defense. But, I mean, I promise you, without Kai Cabela, that was going to be a losing effort. And what a wonderful way for a kid to assert himself. And you know, Coach Richmond said in his press conference today that he just felt like Cabela's has been shooting the ball at a high level in practice, and if he could see one or two go in, that he was going to be able to have that kind of performance. And I got to tell you, if Cabela's can play at that level consistently, you might see him as a starting point guard sooner rather than later.
That's quite a bold statement there. Wow. All right, Ross.
Well, just Dupree has struggled. There's no There's no other way really to put it. And obviously this is one game, and I understand that completely, but if this is a turning point for him and he plays this way, mm-hmm. say in 5 of the next 8 or 6 of the next 10, I could see a switch. I mean, and Dupree certainly has the type of game that you'd love to have coming off the bench. Just a kid who, you know, comes in, defends, and then tries to get buckets at the rim, as opposed to, you know, what he's doing now, which is that, but not distributing maybe in the way that you want your starting point guard to. Cabelas is a better jump shooter than Dupree. And I think as far as like an assist to turnover ratio type of thing, is maybe a guy you'd rather see in there. At the same time, Dupree has given this program a lot of really important minutes. So it's certainly possible he'll continue to be the starting point guard.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of minutes, you look at the last game there. I understand Kai had a heck of a game, which ultimately led to him being on the floor more. But he did have more minutes than Carlin Dupree. He had 24 minutes to the 21. So, again, it's just an anomaly as Kai was playing so well. But I see your point. Another guard I think we should talk about is Malik Clements. I think he's another guy that is showing some improvement. Would you agree?
I absolutely would. And you know, if you go back to, I think it was the last episode of Bison Report Radio where I spliced in some of my conversation with Coach Richmond, he said Malik's been shooting the ball a lot, and I'm not sure if he's been shooting it really well. And apparently, according to today's press conference, that was kind of a rough practice for Kai and Malik, that Wednesday afternoon practice after we all got to talk to them. And Richmond kind of called them easy targets, obviously, because of the culture of NDSU basketball. Three big dances in the last 5 years. This is a situation where those two were the new guys coming in, and they were the two new guys expected to immediately contribute to the team. Now, granted, Dylan Miller is also immediately contributing to the team, but it was understood early on that Clements and Cabelas were going to be certainly part of things. And the one thing that stuck with me that Richmond said was, I think Malik needs to realize that he's a scorer and not so much a shooter. And that's kind of been what I've seen. He can knock down the occasional big three, and if he keeps working on his jumper, I'm fine with him shooting a few, but he at 6'4 has a great frame as far as a mid-major basketball player with his skill level to go in and get buckets inside. Very similar to Carlin Dupree, but he's a little bit taller and a little bit wider. So when he gets down into the painted area off the dribble, he's a guy who can finish at the rim and he can finish on the break. And that's a big deal, especially when you consider how many point guards the Bison have, or point guard level ball handlers the Bison have. Paul Miller gets a rebound, they're going. Kai Cabelas gets a rebound, they're going. Carlin Dupree gets a rebound, they're going. So to have a guy who can slash and to have a guy who can finish on the break like Clements, not, you know, stand out there and settle for three after three after three, is a big deal. And I thought that the way he played against the Fighting Hawks was much, much better.
Speaking of Paul Miller, I think we should probably talk about how he and A.J. Jacobson led the Bison in minutes against the Fighting Hawks. As between the two of them, they were only off the floor for a total of 4 minutes the entire game. What do you think of Richmond's decision to just leave them out there for basically the entire game?
Yeah, 37 and 39 minutes respectively. You know, that's a lot, and I think that it'll be a rarity. At the same time, that's a rivalry game. With 5 days until the next game, the Bison don't play again until Wednesday, and so these kids have time to recover. Obviously, you know, Miller and Jacobson are both sophomores and can probably take the pounding. Just two guys that the Bison need on the floor to be successful. They are obviously the top two scorers for North Dakota State at this point, and they played a ton of minutes against the Fighting Hawks, and I think that, you know, you could, in a big game, maybe see them creep up to that 35-minute mark. But at the same time, Richmond's a smart coach. I mean, they're not going to run these guys ragged. It was just cool to see in a big game like that, those two kids take so much responsibility for beating UND. And that is an important, as much as people like to downplay it, that is an important part of just being a Bison.
Another thing I want to ask you about is Dylan Miller. getting the start at center. You know, what were your thoughts? He only did play 11 minutes the entire game, but what were your thoughts on him actually getting the nod?
Well, I was interested by it, I guess, and it led me to ask a question at today's press conference pertaining to it, and I think that's going to be the way that they're going to go moving forward. Chris Kading's not at 100%. We've talked about it. I wouldn't say ad nauseum, but it's certainly been discussed on this show as well as in stuff that I've written for BisonReport.com. This is a guy who's had both shoulders operated on and both hips operated on. He is a fifth-year senior who has really kind of gone through it for this program. And last year he was sort of thrown into that five spot. They really like what they have in Dylan Miller. Those were the three big reasons. Richmond gave me three big reasons for the move. And I think that because of that, this is going to stick. They want to get Jacobson a little bit of a blow at the four and play a little bit of two big stuff. So that's why Kading is now kind of also the backup at the four and five. So they can play Kading and Miller, or they can play Kading and Werner together. They like Chris in that backup role. He's not 100% healthy. And then the third part being they really like Dylan Miller, and I do too. I mean, I think he is a tremendous talent, and man, would it be something if he and Cabelas both did grab starting spots and you go, you know, freshman, sophomore, sophomore, senior, freshman as your starting five. There's a bright, bright future at NDSU, and I think that Dylan Miller moving to, you know, a potential four-year starter status at the five position, that's something that Bison fans have to look forward to. And honestly, having guys like Werner and Kading coming off the bench is something that Bison fans look forward to. It certainly makes the second unit more versatile, and it'll be interesting to see how in a non-rivalry game that the Bison are probably projected to win by quite a bit, it'll be interesting to see how the rotation stacks up, how the minutes stacks up, because, I mean, you and I both understand that a starter is a starter by name only if he's still playing 12 minutes a game. And right. I think you'll see that correct itself with Dylan Miller starting at the center position or at the five going into conference play.
I mean, you talked about Chris Kading and how he's beat up and only played 7 minutes against UND. I mean, do we have a timeline and when he could potentially be healthier, or do you think that this is something that's going to be stretched across most of the season, per se?
I think this is it. This is where we're at. You know, this is a guy that, like I said, has had all those operations, but at the same time, he's a tough kid, and he's dealt with this kind of stuff, you know, all of last season. I think he's probably a little bit healthier than last season, but this is to get him a break, and get him into that 18 to 22 minutes instead of the 22 to 28 minutes. And that's fine. I mean, I think that Chris Kading can really give you 18 solid minutes off the bench and lock down a post defender or hit some corner jump shots, things like that. If he gets to play the four a little bit more than the five, I think he's more of a natural four anyway, but I would foresee him playing a little bit more of a, I don't want to call it a limited role, but I'll call it a specialized role going forward, and just giving the Bison some backup big minutes. And then I would not at all be surprised to see him close games. I think he could still be part of the Crunch Time 5.
I like that. Hashtag Crunch Time 5, Ross Uglum right there. But one of the reasons why this Bison team is a little bit frustrating to watch is because of what happened at the free throw line against the Fighting Hawks there. They were a combined 14 of 31 from the line. 45% is not going to get it done, Ross, especially when you shoot from the free throw line over 30 times.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things that Richmond touched on today. He said, hey, look at the season-long numbers. They're still probably fine. You know, obviously, he was disgusted with the 14 of 31 performance. You bring that up to their season free throw shooting percentage, which is, I think, up around 70%, you know, and the Bison win by double digits. And maybe that changes the entire game flow, et cetera, et cetera. But it was tough to watch, man. I mean, I watched that entire game. We were at a bar in West Fargo, and we had the Illinois State game on one TV, and we were streaming the the Bison and the Fighting Hawks on the other one. So it was tough to watch NDSU run good offensive sets, get fouled, and go to the line and climb two free throws. And the front end's some one-on-ones. And then at the same time, you know, that game was over with a minute left. NDSU was up six, and UND started fouling, and the Bison started clanking free throws and let them right back in it. So that's something that I think needs to get addressed. But I would say, personally, that this is an anomaly more than it is a trend, because if you do look at that season-long free throw percentage, there's really nothing wrong with it.
All right, so let's summarize this four-game road trip. The Bison are, you know, 4 games, 10 days, 4 different states. You start against a tough Iowa State team in Ames. You end up in Grand Forks against UND. What do you think Bison fans should take away from this road trip?
Well, I think they should take away exactly what Richmond said. Good, not great. Anytime you go on the road, non-conference, splitting is probably fine. You think you would have liked to go 3-1. I don't think anyone assumed they were going to beat Iowa State. That would have been national newsworthy for sure. But at the same time, they probably shouldn't have lost to a Southern Miss team that they just can't seem to figure out. And so, like I said, I think good, not great is exactly what he said, and that's what Bison fans should take out of that four-game road trip. This is a 6-3 team. They got a chance to go 7-3 with Wednesday's game against Montana State. We'll see how the holiday tournament goes. But if you project the Bison as a 12-4 or an 11-5 Summit League team, you're looking at another 23, 24, 25 win season. So the non-conference, you have to be pretty happy about where this team is at, just considering how young it is.
All right, so let's talk about the Bison's next game, which is going to be Wednesday night, 7 p.m. in Fargo, against the Montana State team out of the Big Sky Conference. What can you tell me about Montana State?
Well, they're 5-4, 4-4 in the Division I. The only real comp game, for some reason, too, they played Wyoming, and they did like a home-and-home series with them, back-to-back games. They beat Wyoming 83-82, and then got trashed by Wyoming like 3 days later. It was a very weird scheduling quirk in a non-conference situation. So I thought that was interesting. Wyoming was a tournament team last year. They're also kind of a one-man team. Larry Nance Jr. is not a part of that program anymore. He is playing professionally, I think, in the NBA or the D-League, one of the two. It's not overseas. So I'm not as impressed, obviously, by that win against Wyoming. Other than that, the big comp, I think, would be the 100-97 loss to Summit League member Omaha, which for a 40-minute game is a lot of points.
Yeah, it's not every day in a 40-minute game you get to see 197 points going up, and there isn't a guy named Steph Curry on the other team. But, you know, as you said, you know, another weird thing I'm looking at with Montana State's schedule is they play a ton of games on the road, Ross. Their last game at home was on December 6th, which is only over a week ago, but their next home game is January 7th. They're on the road for a month. That's just very surprising to me. But anyways, let's keep talking about this Montana State team. Where are they, you know, obviously in related to the Big Sky Conference, where are they projected to, you know, end up, I should say, I guess, where are they projected to end up at the end of the conference play?
Well, that's exactly why I'm a little bit surprised, because they have played so many road games. And with a 4-4 Division I record, this is a team that was picked to finish 11th in Big Sky play, and we've talked about this leading up to the Fighting Hawks game. That's not a great conference. It's not a great FCS football conference, and it's not a great basketball conference whatsoever. So the fact that these guys are, you know, muddling around 500 with a pretty decent non-conference schedule, and they were picked to finish, you know, that low in the Big Sky, is impressive and maybe a little bit concerning heading into Wednesday night.
Well, looking at the roster here for Montana State, it looks like their top two leading scorers are two guards. What can you tell me about?
Well, it's interesting that you say that because it's a striking percentage of their team's points. Marcus Colbert and Tyler Hall are the only two Bobcats averaging double-digit points, and they are currently averaging 35 and a half a game between the two of them, which the Bobcats are averaging exactly 80 per contest, and that means that these two kids are making up 44% of their scoring. One of those guys, and I can't remember off the top of my head which one it is a true freshman. Those two guards are gonna be tough, and that's why I think, you know, they are actually probably a pretty decent matchup for NDSU because of the Corey Brown and Carlin Dupree effect, with Paul Miller being that third guy on a switch situation. You couldn't really ask for two better perimeter defenders to take away two guards when those two guards are really the only way that Montana State can score.
Absolutely. And last time the Bison played the Cats here, it didn't go so well for Montana State. I mean, is there anything that you think this team can, you know, take from that victory last year?
Well, and that's why I have such a high level of confidence going into this game, is that game was in Bozeman, and it was 72-51 Bison at a point in the season where that team hadn't really found itself yet. In fact, they ended up losing to Montana, who they just beat by 20 this year, very shortly after all of that happened. So I just don't think Montana State is a very good matchup for NDSU. I don't think they were last year. And with this thing, you know, being a home game, I'd have a hard time seeing Montana State pulling the upset.
So, I mean, what are we thinking here for potential game score?
Bison by 20. I mean, I think to expect anything more would be difficult, maybe even a little bit arrogant. But they beat Montana by 20, and Montana is a much better program than Montana State basketball-wise. I don't think there's really any question about that. But at the same time, it's just difficult to pick a college basketball team to win by more than 20. So that's where I'm at there.
I mean, do you want to touch any more on the fact that the Cats are in the middle of a stretch here, where, as I touched on, they're not going to be having another home game for at least three more weeks?
Right. I mean, this is a weird scheduling quirk for NDSU as well. This is the first time the Bison have been at home in 2 weeks, and they won't be home again for another 2 weeks, and that's just a game against that's a non-D1 game against Northland College of Wisconsin, which, you know, kind of the I guess the warm-up game after everybody gets back from Christmas break. They're going to go down to Utah and play in a holiday tournament, but this is a lull for Shields Arena basketball right now. Ryan, have you got a recruiting update for us, both men's basketball and football-wise?
I mean, there's not a ton to touch on, especially since the only open scholarship right now is in the 2017 class, where, you know, these kids are just starting their junior basketball seasons. But again, I'll keep talking about Cokeef every week, and especially now because Chase Allen, you know, the NDSU tight end target, and he's also a Minnesota tight end target, just picked up an offer from Michigan. And if Michigan is able to take, you know, Chase Allen away from the Gophers, who are currently leading for him, that puts Cokeef back square in between the crosshairs to pick up a Gopher offer. And if he gets that Gopher offer, I have very little, you know, hope that he stays with NDSU. You know, it's also going to be interesting to watch with Bob Nielsen hire. Obviously, you know, fans now know probably that he went from Western Illinois out to South Dakota, and there were some, you know, overlap between the two. There's a couple of recruits such as, you know, William Bradley King. He's a defensive end that is probably the top name to watch if Cokeef does go elsewhere. Plus, they were battling for Jabril Cox, who's the top Bison NDSU, you know, linebacker target from Missouri there. So it's going to be very interesting to watch how the recruiting battle set up now with Nielsen heading out to South Dakota. But I'm curious for your thoughts on the move, Ross.
Well, it's interesting, and a buddy actually asked me today, why would one go from Western Illinois to South Dakota? I think there's a number of reasons. I'm assuming his financial package was improved. The second thing would be the facilities there. The Dakota Dome is not a nice place, but the rest of the athletic facilities have received a $90 million upgrade in the last couple of years, and some of that stuff is, I think, still under construction, but there is a commitment to winning at USD that is very serious. They hired Craig Smith as the basketball coach, a former Tim Miles disciple. Bison fans will obviously remember that name, but he's the head coach at Nebraska right now, head basketball coach. I think that they're trying to change the culture a little bit more in Vermillion. Thirdly, I would think that he's probably closer to his recruiting base, just because he kind of made his bones at UMD, which is Minnesota Duluth, won two national championships at the Division II level for the Bulldogs. And then finally, you know, I'm thinking the fact that it just is a state school. You have that brand. Western Illinois is kind of a directional school, and so he'll just have more resources being one of the two land-grant universities in the state of South Dakota. So those are kind of the reasons. And then the funny reason, or maybe not so funny reason, is so that he can be closer to Fargo. Nielsen is a name to keep in mind if, heaven forbid, Chris Klieman takes an FBS job.
Is there something we should know, Ross? Is there something you want to break here on the BisonReport.com radio podcast, or you want to save that for a different time?
Nope, I don't want to break anything. I have no knowledge of a pending climate move. All I am going to say is that this staff is very young. I don't believe that if climate did take an FBS job, you would see offensive coordinator Tim Polasek or defensive coordinator Matt Entz move up, and I think they would have to look outside the program, and Nielsen is a guy to keep your eye on. But at the same time, I don't think Kleiman's going anywhere after this season, and I'm not willing to speculate on what might happen after 2016.
All right, so we'll keep you off the hook for now, but let's move on to that victorious Saturday against UNI. But it all starts with, as you were saying, at the bar. As most things, you know, good things in life probably do. But it's set up by that Illinois State loss on Friday night. How impressed with Richmond were you that they were able to upset Illinois State?
Absolutely. And you know, as we've discussed on this podcast, I kind of do things my own way as far as a media coverage perspective goes. And so I didn't travel to Grand Forks for the basketball game, even though it was just a short trip. I picked a local establishment to be able to watch both of the relevant NDSU goings-on at the same time, enjoyed some good fellowship, some good food, and maybe just a couple of beverages, especially after the 69-67 win in men's basketball. But that was a huge, huge deal. The loss to Richmond by Illinois State of the Missouri Valley Football Conference was huge. It meant that if North Dakota State was able to take care of Northern Iowa, they were going to get that third home game. And that's been the formula to get to the national championship each of the last 4 years. NDSU, in their four national championship runs, have played zero playoff games away from the Fargo Dome. The only games that they've played away from the Dome in the playoffs were neutral site national championship contests in Frisco, Texas. And if NDSU wins on Saturday, the only away game they're going to play is a neutral site national championship game in Frisco, Texas. So that was a huge, huge deal.
So what you're telling me is neutral site and home games are the key to success in FCS, is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
It seems like a reasonable formula. But again, so with that loss, the Bison knew that if they won, they get to come back to the Fargo Dome again next weekend, and they were able to accomplish that. But it didn't start out so well for NDSU as you and I drove down, and Aaron Bailey was actually throwing a touchdown pass for once. I mean, were you starting to get a little bit nervous knowing how pivotal these first few drives were?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, it set an interesting tone for the game. A lot of talk leading up to the game, including on this podcast, that Easton Stick might have to open up the offense a little bit and, you know, throw it around, maybe win a shootout. And with UNI having 7 points after the first 4 minutes of the game, it looked like it could be, you know, a shootout situation. That problem was compounded by the fact that NDSU went 3 and out on their first drive. But what UNI did on that opening possession was extremely impressive. They had a 75-yard drive because of the kickoff touchback by Ben McComb, bringing it up to the 25. And their run-pass balance, from a yardage perspective, was 38 yards to 37 yards. They looked like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, and the nice thing about it was the Bison defense woke up and they only allowed 146 yards the rest of the game. What do you think it was that really flipped the switch for this NDSU defense?
I couldn't quite get it out of Coach Kleiman, but the only words that he really said is, we changed how we played the quarterback. And so that, whatever flip that they did, whatever technique that they changed, whatever key that they switched from position to position, it worked. Their running back, Smith, couldn't get anything going. They shut down Bailey, and like you said, 146 yards, and they only give up 6 points in the remainder of the game, and three of those points were off of a Darius Anderson fumble deep in NDSU's own territory. So as far as scoring drives, the Bison really only gave up 2 scoring drives, and for against a rush offense like UNI has, that was just extremely impressive. That Bison defense was showing out all day long and had the NDSU home crowd in a ruckus.
I don't think anybody can disagree with that. Looking at the offensive side of the ball, Ross, Easton Stick didn't have a spectacular day by any means. He was 13 of 17 for 116 yards, and he only had 7 carries for 5 yards on the ground, so you know, he was efficient, and that was the formula for success, and the Bison were able to capitalize on a victory because of that.
It really is unbelievable how good this running offense and defense as a whole is. I mean, they are taking such good care of this freshman quarterback, and then all they ask him to do is go out and complete easy passes, and he does it. 13 of 17, only had to really make one play, and what a play it was. That he was rolling to his right. He rifled about a 17-yard comeback route to Darius Shepherd that was just a beautiful, beautiful throw. I know I said before the game I felt like Easton Stick could win a game with his arm. I still feel that way, but why? What's the point? There's no need for it. It was just a workmanlike performance. And here I go with a whole bunch of white guy stereotypes. You know, he brought his lunch pail to the game. Was gritty, gutty, tough, but he was very, very impressive, and this defense and the running game and the offensive line continues to take care of their freshman quarterback.
Speaking of the quarterback, one guy that didn't dress that, you know, fans were speculating about was Carson Wentz. I know that you were telling listeners all week that I wouldn't expect a whole lot out of Carson yet. He's still a few weeks away. But again, it's worth noting that Carson did not dress. I mean, were you surprised by that considering he was out throwing around last week?
No, I wasn't. And that's what I told listeners and readers all week long. Just, I wouldn't expect Wentz. And, you know, the FCS playoffs, you only get to dress 60 guys. And that sounds like a lot considering you only play 11 at a time. But if Wentz is in a jersey and pads, Kleiman described him as number 61 this week. And if he gets a jersey and pads, someone has to sit down. Whether that's third quarterback James Hendricks or an actual position player, it's interesting. I mean, that's something to pay attention to going forward. He's going to have to meaningfully contribute to this game or be available to actually play quarterback in an emergency situation if they're going to sit someone down for him. I'm going to stick with my original prediction, and we'll talk about it a little bit more on the Thursday edition of Bison Report Radio. I think you see him dress. I'm not sure you see him contribute so much in this game against Richmond, and then I think if they do make it to the national championship game, you're going to see a true two-quarterback attack in the national title game in Frisco.
bold calls here on Bison Report Radio, but one guy who started out a little bit iffy, Ross, but really came on as he has all season, is C.J. Smith. Again, he had that touchdown thrown over him there where it just looked like he planted and jumped, and he just couldn't get the lift that he was expecting, because if he had, I think that would have been at least a pass defended or, at minimum, an interception. But he really rebounded from that, and he had two more pass breakups as the game went on. What can you say about C.J. Smith?
A wonderfully impressive game, and I have nothing but nice things to say about CJ. Yeah, he did give up the touchdown, but that was a perfect throw. And you're right, he gets a pass breakup if he just times his jump a little bit better. And the reason that he gets a pass breakup if he times his jump a little bit better is because he was in perfect trail position. If that ball is overthrown by a yard, it's out of bounds. If it's underthrown by a yard, it's an interception. It was, for a kid that, you know, nobody thinks can throw the ball, it was a perfectly thrown ball. Granted, it was, you know, almost 25% of Bailey's, or it was almost 33% of Bailey's production for the entire game, but that's just the way that it goes. And his, I watched how they played it. They did exactly what I said they were going to do. He followed Fountain, and it's interesting because Fountain's not the kid that scored the touchdown on him. That was Brandon Smith, but he followed Fountain around the entire game. And Jordan Champion played the other receiver. They played mostly base, so Jalen Allison was not in there providing the nickel help. And, you know, he held Fountain, who's a very, very good player, to two catches, 38 yards. That was it. And in fact, on the 33-yard reception from Fountain, that was a cover two look where Smith let him go and Robbie Grimsley was in coverage. And it was a kind of a broken play, and Fountain came back to the ball. It was really nobody's fault. It was actually a hell of a play by Aaron Bailey. But in targets to Fountain, he gave up one for 5 yards. That's it. And that is a really good football player that C.J. Smith just removed from the equation of the game.
The guy that, you know, it's not every day that we talk about special teams in great depth on the podcast here, but we have to talk about punter Ben LeCompte. He was absolutely, I don't know how you can describe a punter's game without phenomenal. Again, 6 punts, 5 inside the 20, and 3 over 50. And I think his net on all of these punts was very minimal. He was just, he was outstanding. Just outstanding, Ross.
Yeah, he was he was fantastic. And Ben is a guy that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I was really disappointed last season when he was not named an All-American. I thought he was the best punter in FCS as a junior. He's certainly the best punter in FCS this year as a senior. I think it'd be very surprising if he was not first team All-American in FCS football, and honestly, he's a pro prospect as well. He's going to get he's going to get an invite to a camp. I don't know if he's going to get a job. You know, there are 32 only of those positions whatsoever, and a lot of punters play till they're like 40. But Ben is a kid that kicks off well and punts extremely well. And if you can do that, you can have kind of a more accurate kicker. You don't have to worry about your kicker being able to kick off. That's something that NFL teams covet. So I would say that Ben has a very good chance playing on Sundays, and this was the single best performance I've ever seen from a Bison punter. And they've had some exceptional punters. Mike Dragosevich was a guy in that Steve Walker, Joe Mays era that had a cup of coffee with a couple NFL teams, the Detroit Lions for one, and then I think he might have gotten a shot with somebody else as well. But this is a program that consistently recruits and develops exceptional specialists, and LeCompte might honestly be the best one that I've seen.
Take note, Brandon Nickel, the Tennessee punter who received an offer 2 weekends ago that, as Russ said, there is a history here of developing special teamers. Another guy who had a phenomenal day on the defensive side of the ball was Nick DeLuca. It's the same story it's been all year, Ross. Leads the Bison in tackles with 16, and he was just a force all over the field.
And that, I think, is, you know, the big reason why Tyron Smith never got going. And we talked about that a little bit leading up into the game, that was what they were going to try and accomplish. There was no question about it. They were going to try and run the ball. And the two big matchups were DeLuca and the defensive tackles, who we'll talk about shortly, against the running back. And then the edge defenders against Bailey. Everybody did a fantastic job, but specifically DeLuca and the defensive tackles were fantastic. DeLuca's such a good player, second in MVFC Defensive Player of the Year voting, and a guy that I really, really look forward to watching for the next two seasons. What an exceptional athlete, and I'm hoping to get a chance to sit down and talk to him and provide some of that audio for you in the Thursday edition of Bison Port Radio.
Two more guys before we wrap things up here on the podcast, Ross, is your guy, Brian Schatz, had probably the play of his career with the safety there late in the fourth quarter, and Nate Tangway also came into play. What can you say about those two guys?
They're just incredible, and that was, you know, I try not to be a huge homer in the way that I cover NDSU athletics, but man, when I saw the all-conference team come out with neither Tangway or Schatz on it, I really did have a problem with that. These two guys are, maybe they're not the two best defensive tackles in the conference, but they are definitely the best tandem in the conference, and I just think that one of those two guys had to make it. Probably would have gone with Schatz, just maybe because of seniority. Their production is pretty similar, but he is a hell of a player, and so is Tangway. Both guys had a sack on the day. That's an impressive guy to sack, Bailey. It's very, very difficult, especially rushing from that inside possession. But, hey, you and I had the ball with 2 minutes left and a chance to tie. They were only down eight. Schatz blows through the gap. Bailey, you know, would have had to intentionally ground the ball to avoid the safety, which would have been a safety anyway. So he ate it. All of a sudden, bang, it's 10-0 Bison. The game is over. It's a two-score game with less than 2 minutes, and you know, you and I has to try like an onside free kick, punt, whatever that Zach Brock comes down with, and the Bison go into the victory formation. But just so impressive, those two. They shut down Smith all game long. There was nobody running through their gaps, and you don't normally see guys that can rush the passer that are that good at run defense, and they just excel at both. Tangway is going to be an absolute monster for the next 2 years, and Schatz will be sorely missed.
When looking at, you know, the final four here for the FCS football bracket, on one side of the bracket you obviously have North Dakota State and Richmond on Friday, but looking at the other side of the bracket, Ross, that game with Jacksonville State and Sam Houston State might end up being like 52-49. I mean, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, and I think that's okay to some extent. But, I mean, what do you think about the other side of the bracket? Which team scares you more without knowing, you know, too much research on both teams?
Neither of them. And I'm not trying to be arrogant, but that brand of football struggles so much against NDSU when they have to play them. I mean, you saw Sam Houston come to NDSU after two hard-fought playoff games in the national semifinal on a Friday night and absolutely get run out of the building. And I think it's going to happen. I mean, you can go to check the tape. What did I tell you about this tournament? If NDSU makes it to Frisco, they should be favored by 30. And I have no reason to say anything different than that. What I think is interesting, though, is, you know, the Bison fan base and media did quite a bit of complaining about all of the Missouri Valley teams getting stuck on the same side of the bracket. And while it might make for an easier championship game for North Dakota State, I'm not convinced that the field ended up with the two best teams at the end, should North Dakota State get past Richmond. But I think the real big talking point here is just that they only had to play Northern Iowa. South Dakota State couldn't get it done at Montana. Granted, that game should not have been played in Missoula. South Dakota State had a much better season than the Grizz, and if their stadium wasn't under construction, they wouldn't have had to play that game in Missoula. You probably would have seen a Bison-Jacks rematch, but Illinois State couldn't get it done either. They were going to host that game, So this Missouri Valley Conference bracket of death really only resulted in a 10-point win over Northern Iowa.
All that for I wouldn't say all that for nothing, but all that for, you know, North Dakota State is on the verge of another national championship. So, Ross, why don't you preview what we got going on a little bit later this week again?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got some availability that I'm excited about this week. I'm going to be able to talk to the basketball team either tomorrow night or Wednesday at shoot around. And then I've requested to speak to some NDSU linebackers. So we'll see how that goes if I get a chance to talk to those guys one-on-one. Obviously, I'll share that interview or those interviews with the Bison Report Radio listeners. And then we'll get into the Montana State basketball review, talk about how that game went, and we will break down anything and everything NDSU v. Richmond in advance of the Friday Night Lights game on Friday evening at 7 o'clock. And guys, I got to tell you, that is always the best tailgate of the year, is that Friday afternoon to evening tailgate.
So is that an invitation for any and all listeners to show up at the tailgate? At your specific one?
Yeah, absolutely. Look for the big bus decorated in NDSU stuff. It's the only one.
Well, that is going to be our holiday gift to each and every one of you as we wrap up the podcast here for this Monday night edition here of the Bison Report Radio podcast. So again, we thank you guys for listening, again, for your time and attention. It's the most precious thing you guys have. If you want to help support us, you can subscribe to the Bison Report website itself. It's $5 a month. That's just one cup of coffee a day. It's very simple. It's very easy for the best Bison news around the entire Fargo area and around the country. You also can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcasting form that you used to found, or that you did use to find us, and give us a rating as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Ross Uglum, at Ryan Burns MN, and at NDSU on Scout. So for Ross, for I, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.